also welcome to the Monroe City Council's meeting here for June 4th, 2013. At this time, I'd like to call the meeting to order and ask if we can take roll call.
Councilperson Gary.
Here.
Cudaback.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
Camp.
Present.
Davis.
Present.
Gamble.
Here.
Hanford.
Here.
And student representative Perano.
Present.
All right, thank you. Please join me now for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Tonight, under our presentations, we have the honor of welcoming to our family, so to speak, a new officer. And we will be participating this evening in his swearing-in ceremony. Honored to be joined this evening by our own Judge Clough, who will be participating and giving the oath. Thank you. So at this time, if I might, call the Chief of Police, Chief Quinzer, as well as Officer Joe Clark. Stark. You know, I just came from watching a commercial for Superman, I think is what it was. So Joe Stark.
Okay, first of all, I always have this disclaimer at the beginning here that my fine staff writes everything out so I don't ad-lib on this, and I guess I'm ad-libbing right now, but I want to thank all those in attendance, Mayor Zimmerman, the council members, co-workers, family and friends of our officer being recognized tonight. I want to thank Judge Clough for officiating the ceremony, and also like to introduce you to Officer Joe Stark. Joe began his career with our department on July 9th, 2012. He grew up in Renton, Washington, and currently lives in Kirkland with his wife, Gretchen, and recently adopted 13-month-old son, Brett Lee.
Yay!
He has attended Bellevue Community College, studying business, and working for Costco before joining our department. He graduated from the Basic Law Enforcement Academy on January 31st, 2013, and has just recently finished his field training assignment.
I'm a student of Thunderbilt. I'd like to say a few words. Officer, to be, I've lived in Monroe since 53, down when I was 7 years old. During that period of time, I had a lot of interactions with the Monroe Police Department, both as a citizen, defender, a lawyer, and now a judge. It is one of the finest, you're about to join one of the finest, most professional police organizations that I've run across during those years. So, I'll welcome you in advance. These people are here to see you, not me, so let's have you face them. I'll stand over here in a minute for the oath. We didn't get to rehearse this. All you have to remember is when I say repeat your name, say your name, but say your name. You raise your right hand, please. Repeat after me. I, Joe Stark.
I, Joe Stark.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
Of the United States.
United States.
And the Constitution and the laws.
And the Constitution and the laws.
Of the state of Washington.
Of the state of Washington.
And the ordinances of the city of Monroe.
And the ordinances of the city of Monroe.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties.
And I will faithfully discharge the duties.
Of police officer for the city of Monroe Police Department.
Of police officer for the city of Monroe Police Department.
And I will do so to the best of my abilities.
And I will do so to the best of my abilities.
Congratulations, officer.
Okay, good job. you'd like to say, feel free.
Yes, this is the gal that pinned my badge on is my lady wife, Gretchen. It's my father, Jim Stark. My mother, Kimberly Stark. It's my wife's aunt, Lisa, and my 13-month-old son, Bradley.
He's having a lot of fun in Tyrone. Entryway.
And I guess I just want to say I appreciate the opportunity to serve the fine city. Well,
we're very happy that you're with us. Welcome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We are going to take a couple minute recess here to allow for some photos, if you would. And I would invite your lovely bride to come back up and join you. And if we could, Your Honor, would you mind coming back up as well? And we'll have some pictures along with you and Chief Quinzer.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on here. And again, welcome to Officer Stark. Very pleased and proud that he's a part of the Monroe City Police Department. The next part of our agenda this evening is my request for council to confirm two appointments this evening. The first of which would be Andrea Frame. Andrea came to meet with myself and Betsy Lewis, brain freeze, you know, hot outside the brain freeze. Met within Betsy Lewis and myself to speak about the opportunity to serve as part of the library board, and I believe you have some information regarding her. And so, as a result of the conversation and the meeting, we extended an invitation to invite Andrea to be part of the library board, and this evening I'm asking for a motion to confirm her appointment. And would welcome a motion from council if anyone would like. Councilor McGarry.
So moved.
Sir. All right, a motion has been made by Councilmember McGarry and seconded by Councilmember Gamble to appoint confirm the mayor's appointment of Andrea Frank to the library board. Right. And she's not here, is she? All right. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The second appointment request this evening is for Laura Ramey. Laura met with myself and Mike Farrell. And we had a really good conversation, and really appreciated some of the thoughts that she had. Laura, are you here? Yeah. With regards to our heart system, and appreciated her viewpoints from both a conservation point of view as well as understanding our parks do have an industrial or are part of an industrial setting, so there's a large mix of park uses and park attendees. And so anyways, both Mike and I felt very comfortable and appreciative of both her viewpoints and desires for a park system. And with that said, I would ask tonight for a motion to confirm the appointment of Laura Ray to the park board.
So moved.
Second.
Motion was made by Councilmember Hanford and seconded by Councilmember Davis. Any other questions? All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Thank you very much. Well, the last presentation that we have this evening is a recognition. And I am going to ask Councilmember Camp, if he might come to the front.
Mr. Verano, would you meet me?
And Student Representative Verano, if you might join us as well.
Got the mayor coming.
For those of you on the council know that we made a special effort last year to have a student representative, to find someone from the student body to represent the students to the city council. We were very fortunate in our selection of Brandon Morado, a very intelligent, very energetic man, all the way down to the Kausu, if I remember correctly. Brandon, it's been an honor to work with you on this. I present you the certificate on behalf of the city, and welcome in the future. Good luck.
We've got two copies of the certificate of achievement, one to hang on his wall, one for the Bragg
book. Where are you going?
I'm headed to the University of California on the San Diego campus.
Awesome.
Very good. Yes,
thank you. Thank you.
Okay. We do have two public hearings for this evening, the first of which is this extinguishment of drainage easement. And Mr. Bauer, welcome back from your vacation.
You.
Glad to have you here this evening.
Appreciate that. We got, before I went on vacation, you had a passed a resolution declaring surplus a drainage easement located on Beaton Road at about 171st. And this comes up, and we'll show you a picture of that. And as since this is a utility easement, it's requiring a state law that we hold a public hearing to take public testimony on whether or not the city should get rid of this easement. Let's get close.
Mr. Ingram, will be back.
Certainly. So we think we're going to look at easement pictures. It's actually a slideshow of his.
Yes, actually all 2,500 slides.
Of his trip.
Someone unplugged it. That might work. There we go. Okay. Well, let's turn the lights up so you can actually see it.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes. But the blue area is the existing easement, and as you can see, it has a part of a large concrete tilt-up building on it and a mobile office. And the yellow crosshatch area is the easement that we're getting in exchange for relinquishing the larger easement, and that is actually where we have some current stormwater facilities. If you are familiar with the area, a little bit to the west or the left on the picture, there's a pump station, but that is in an existing different easement, so that's not included in this easement. So if you don't have any questions, now would be the time to open it up for public testimony and see if there's any comments regarding this relinquishment of an easement.
All right. Seeing no lights, then we will now open up the public hearing for comments from the public. I do not have anybody signed up at this time. However, if there's anyone who is in attendance this evening who would like to address this item before council, you may do so by approaching the podium. We'd ask for your name and address for the record, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. Would anyone like to speak this evening? All right. Seeing none, I would entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
All right. Motion has been made by Councilmember Williams and seconded by Councilmember Cutterback. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilmember Amber.
If there's no discussion, I'd like to make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
All right, motion's now been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Garian to close the public hearing. Any other questions, comments? All right. We'll vote on the motion then at this time. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Edie, if you would let the record show that Councilmember Camp had stepped out of the chambers before the prior vote. He was not participating.
He was here for this vote.
He was here for this vote. Okay, Brad?
Okay.
Public hearing is now closed. What else would you like to do?
There's a recommended motion to direct staff to prepare documents to relinquish the existing easement and create the new easement.
So moved.
Second. All right. Motion has been made by Councilmember Pettibank, seconded by Councilmember Williams to provide direction to staff to prepare easement release and the creation of documents. Any other questions? Comments? Very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. All right. We do have a second public hearing scheduled this evening, and that is an interim sign code. Again, Mr. Feilberg.
Thank you. A while ago, you adopted the interim sign code regulations as a temporary measure to get some feedback from the community on how the sign code amendments are taken by the community to see if there's any corrections that need to be made. As this was done as an interim measure, it is required by state law to have a public hearing within 60 days of passage. That's what we're doing tonight. And also in the meantime, from the original adoption of the interim ordinances, you did do an interim amendment to the interim regulations to change the site, the height of the signs in the Highway 522 area from 35 feet to 45 feet. So this is also a public hearing for that interim ordinance also. So as required by state law, you're to take testimony from any concerned citizens about the interim regulations, and if not, and you don't want to make any changes, there is no action required afterwards.
Okay, so at this time we will open the public hearing with regards to the interim sign code. Again, I have not had anyone sign up to speak this evening, but would allow for members of the audience to address council on this subject if you so desire. I ask that you approach the podium and provide your name and address for the record. Please limit your time to 5 minutes. Sir?
Sure, I'll be a lot quicker than 5 minutes.
All right, very good.
Evan Kallstead with branch manager for NC Machinery in the Frylands at 14597 169th Drive Southeast, Monroe, Washington. I thought there'd be more people to speak on this, but I read through the sign ordinance and it looked like a very fair, thorough, good sign ordinance from all I could tell. So, from my point of view, go for it.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Thanks.
Please.
I'm Bonnie Rollstone, and I have Harry Spirits and Wines at 14426 169th Drive Southeast. I have questions on the sign ordinance A about A boards, and because I have a retail business that is actually in the industrial area, there is a problem for getting direction to my business. So I want clarification on the A boards. Where they can be, how many you can have. I'm not clear on this. The other suggestion I have is that we be able to construct, and I as a business owner willing to participate in the expense of this, but nice looking posts at every intersection with signage pointing to what businesses are that direction. If we want to participate, we would pay to have our name up there nicely done. Our business is that direction. And my third issue, and this is probably not the place to address it, but is the address of my building. Is very poorly done when the building was built. All of the front doors, there's three businesses in my building, all of them face Thai Street. That should be my address. So I'm not sure where we go with that, but it's very difficult to give directions to my business because of the address. So that is my consideration. I'm concerned about getting direction to my business. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to address council this time? No? Okay. Seeing none, then, would entertain a motion to close the public comment portion of the public hearing.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Hanford to close the public comment portion lights, hearing no comments. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, thank you. Discussion, council? Councilmember Hamford.
So, question for Brad. Can you clarify on the concerns about the A-frame signs, what the answers were?
No, I can't. We will have, if you need your contact information with us, we will have staff contact her tomorrow.
Okay. And then, as far as the signs at the end of the street, which it sounds like a similar idea to what we were talking about doing.
The directional
the North
signs,
Kelsey, you know,
wayfinding signs and things like that. Yes, we'll talk to her about that tomorrow also.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there is a plan in place for where we are. Is the wayfinding study?
Just working on that.
Yeah.
It's not underway at this point. Offsite monument signs may be a potential for this particular circumstance.
We have had discussion about the wayfinding study as well as wayfinding or directional signs. Most of the conversation has been directed at businesses in the downtown area in North Kelsey, but I think it makes perfect sense to include the industrial area as well as part of that focus. So, all right, very well, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I'm just curious if the items about the addressing would fall under the purview of the proposed addressing changes from Councilmember Gearing.
I thought my dreams were crushed.
Oh, no, they were.
Councilmember Gamble.
Councilmember
Gearing. Yeah, I agree. This is not the same issue, though. This, I think this is a legitimate. I mean, that is on Ty Street. Cool. There's no doubt about it. And so I do think that's a very legitimate concern. And I don't know if Brad is the right person to deal with that, but if official action would be necessary, I would certainly like to see it back. Otherwise, it needs to be taken care of.
All right. Anything further? All right, then do we have a motion to close the public hearing?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion's been made by Councilmember Hamford, seconded by Councilmember Gamble to close the public hearing. Brad? Your recommendation at this point is to provide direction to staff for any findings of fact, which...
Would you like to have any findings of fact? And if you're happy with the way it stands, there's no action that's necessary.
Yeah. All right. Okay. And with that said, no motion is necessary. I didn't call for the...
Go ahead.
All right. All those in favor of closing the public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now with that, no further direction is needed this time. Brad? We're good.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving on, at this time we have set aside a period for which comments from citizens is welcome. This is your opportunity to speak to the City Council on any issue except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We would ask that you provide your name and address for the record, and please limit your time to 5 minutes. This is an open time, and again, I don't have anybody signed up. But if there's any member of the audience who would like to address council on any other subject, you may do so at this time by approaching the podium. And I see no one in the audience moving, so it appears that we will move on to the next item, which is the consent agenda. I will ask you for item number 2. And do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda items 1 and 3?
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Councilmember Hamford, seconded by Councilmember Gearing to approve consent agenda items 1 and 3.
Excuse me. There's no item 1. I wasn't
Okay, item three.
John, second.
You were first.
All right.
I'm first. That's right. I thought you were.
Yeah. All right, so the motion is to approve consent agenda item number three.
So moved.
Second.
That's made by Councilmember Hanford, seconded by Councilmember Kieran. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? With that said, I and Councilmember Campbell will be removing ourselves from the chambers out of an abundance of caution so that bills may be approved, and would ask that the Mayor Pro Tem at this time would lead this portion of the meeting.
Looking for a motion to approve consent agenda item number two.
So moved.
Second.
Motion been made by Councilmember Cudbeck, seconded by Councilmember Hanford. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion passes.
On the agenda, we have an executive session pertaining to potential litigation. I ask for the city attorney to clarify and provide the RCW.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Pursuant to RCW 4230-110-19, the council will now convene an executive session to discuss potential litigation with the council. The executive session will last approximately 10 minutes, after which the council may take action in open session when you reconvene.
All right, with that said then, we will now go into executive session. All right, thank you to those in the audience for your patience. We are now back in session. Our next item this evening on tonight's agenda is review of the 2012 building codes. Mr. Fowler.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What's your view about this thing? we brought this before you for introduction last month, and then passed out the proposed changes to you a couple weeks ago for you to review. This is your opportunity to have any comments regarding the adoption of the various codes and specifically the amendments that the city is proposing, because the overall format is set by the state. Two major questions I think are still outstanding. One is when we talked to you last time, we talked about not adopting the international code for property maintenance. And then since that time, we've looked at the 1997 uniform code on the abatement of dangerous buildings, which if you're interested in having some method of enforcing some quality assurance, if you want to call it that, of buildings in town. This was adopted in the past, and it's actually a much better code. It's not quite as comprehensive and doesn't cover things like, you know, window screens and things like that, but it's more on actually dangerous buildings like the stairs or something like that are not safe. That allows us to enforce that. And then the other issue is whether or not to adopt the Appendix S of the International Fire Code, which is the requirement... International Residential Code, which is the requirement for residential fire sprinkler systems. You have some information in the letter that was submitted by Fire Marshal Fitzgerald, along with some brochures and CDs, I think, that were passed out to you today. And he's available today if you'd like to have any questions for him. And with that, do you have any questions? Thoughts.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. Brad, the property maintenance section you're referring to,
yes.
As of right now, that's not included in the proposed changes. Is that correct?
That's not in the language, no.
Okay, and then I didn't see where you the text of where you were talking about on our packet, right? The old code that you were talking about?
That's in the cover sheet. The last paragraph talks about why it would be better if we want to have something like that, why it would be better to adopt the 1997 Uniform Code for the Abatement of Dangerous Buildings rather than the 2012 International Property Maintenance Code.
Correct, but I didn't see the 97 code that we're talking about. Is there the text of that? Was that part of this?
No, because it's, you know, quite a number of pages.
So can you just give us the real high summary viewpoint of that, the, you know, the 10,000?
Foot level, yeah. The 1997 code is more desirable from a staff point of view, at least, than the 2012 International Code. Is the conciseness of the code. It deals more with life safety hazards of, you know, walls are leaning in, or you know, parapets are going to fall off, kind of thing. Stairs are falling down, as opposed to more of the maintenance issues that are included in the 2012 International Code for Property Maintenance. That talks about, you know, people having to have screens installed on their windows, and, you know, doors shut tight and things like that. So it's more concise, not as intrusive into the people's lives. It's also easier to enforce. It has clear methods of enforcement that are specifically laid out, as opposed to being kind of vague in the 2012 code.
Yeah, my concern about the 2012 is how in the world would we ever implement it?
Right.
I don't think there's no way possible we could do that today. So having code that we can't enforce or we choose not to doesn't seem like that makes any sense. What was staff's take on the 97 code? Did they want it included? Do the staff feel that they have the abilities to enforce it and that it makes sense?
It gives us a mechanism when there is something that needs to be addressed in a building. That gives us the tools to do that without adding a burden of having a bunch of regulations that we're never going to get around to enforcing.
Okay. And was that talked at all with the Planning Commission or any other groups?
No.
Thank you. Brad, it looks like letter R of attachment. Is this attachment 2? Deleted by ordinance. And that is the part where I'm having a hard time switching between attachments. Where the fire is great normal sprinklers. Attachment number 3.
Okay, the letter from
Fire Marshal?
Yes.
Yeah. So it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, that was deleted. Is that correct?
What was deleted?
Deleted by ordinance 033-2008.
I'm not sure what you're referring to, sorry.
So on attachment, let's see if it's attachment. I think it's attachment 1 here.
Okay, attachment 1.
Chapter 15.04.
Mm-hmm.
You go down to R. That says it was deleted by the ordinance.
I guess. 1504 what? You got more numbers after that?
One.
1504-100 Section R.
Okay, 100, Section R. Thank you.
International Residential Code, Independent Cities. Here it says, and R, dwelling units, sprinkler systems. In the code 1504-100R, it says that it was repealed or deleted by ordinance 033-2008. So I think the question is the fire board recommending that that is.
Let me see what you're pointing to.
So in the cover page.
Oh, in the cover page. Okay, gotcha.
You've got this. It's renewed. And R and R.
Right.
When you go to 1504-100R, it says.
No, those aren't related. ours are our numbering system for the NMC. The first thing you're talking about is the state building code adoption of the International Residential Code, Appendix R.
Okay.
So the Appendix R is adopted by the state and is also required to be adopted by the city. Is if you install a residential sprinkler system, you have to install it according to Appendix R. Appendix S requires the installation of residential systems. So currently we are planning on adopting Appendix R because we're required to, which just gives the standards of how to install a residential sprinkler system. The question is whether or not to adopt Appendix S, which is the requirement to install a residential sprinkler system.
Is that in 1504-100?
No, because that is current staff recommendation is not to adopt Appendix S.
Okay, good.
The fire district, however, has submitted the information that they think that should be adopted.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be clear. Thank you for clearing that. Yes.
That's right.
Thank you. Fred, you just stated that the current staff recommendation is not to adopt Appendix S.
Correct.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Why?
The cost, basically, of the requirement to do that. It is still available for people if they want to do it, but to mandate it at this time, we think, is not an appropriate step to take, which is different than the fire district's point of view, which they think it should be made mandatory at this time.
So you're basing staff recommendation on the cost that it would cost developers to put it in?
Correct.
Because it's not a cost directly to the city.
No, it's not a cost to the city.
You're saying it's a cost to the developers,
right,
and you don't recommend,
right,
that. What if we did have it? What's your fear?
It would just increase the cost of development.
Okay. Do you think it would make developers less likely to be in the city? I mean, you know, what's the rationale?
Yeah.
I mean, it increases the cost to developers.
I would, like, you want to answer that? I mean, you've talked to builders.
Well, I've had several conversations with them. I've had this conversation for years, but in essence, it would add to that initial cost of construction, and it would add to the cost of all new construction in the city. It would artificially inflate the price of every other home in the community. In that, instead of $25,000 in mitigation fees as a first cost, you'd also have approximately, depending on who you talk to, $5,000 to $12,000 in a sprinkler system that would also be forced upon the buyer. Not every buyer wants a sprinkler system. So the option to provide that sprinkler system to a potential home buyer would be their choice, the buyer's choice, and could ask the builder for that add-on, if you will, rather than make it a requirement. There's additional costs that could be leveraged upon depending on whether or not we require a separate water meter and valves and all the underground equipment that would be required, we have to put a separate service in there. What would the annual fire inspections be? Who would do the inspections every year? What would the cost of the homeowner be on an annual basis? So by including fire sprinklers, there's just a whole series of additional questions that will be asked. Is the average homeowner capable of maintaining and understanding a fire sprinkler system in their house? I think the technology has advanced to the point where they're, I hate to say it, kind of idiot-proof, but they are pretty well constructed now inside the home to prevent accidental turn-ons. But again, it comes down to a life safety argument. Do we put a fire sprinkler out in system in every new house? And then that comes down to the question, is the fire department and fire board going to give a discount to their property taxes because they have a fire sprinkler in their house versus this, 6,000 homes already built in the world that don't have a fire sprinkler in their home? It adds complexity. It's a change. The building industry, I believe Mike Patterson's here. If you'd like to ask him more questions, he's probably much more expert on it. But I agree with Brad. The additional cost to new construction is substantial, and I guess that's my conversation on it.
Okay. Mike, do you mind answering a question?
Certainly. Are you talking to this Mike or?
No, you.
Okay. Because I'm
Mr. Fitzgerald. Captain Fitzgerald, sorry.
That Mike's fine.
Mr. Sachs just talked about the maintenance of the sprinkler system. How hard are they for a homeowner to maintain?
Well, I think the type that the City of Monroe has allows for in our existing code with the adoption of Appendix R is what we call a multi-purpose system. It's tied in with your plumbing system. You flush the toilet, water moves through the fire sprinkler system. It takes no maintenance, no more maintenance than your regular plumbing system. There's an alternative, which is the standard, the old-fashioned way, the kind that I have installed in my house, which is it does require some annual maintenance. It's nothing that takes any expertise. I do it myself. So there's not much maintenance involved, especially given the option that this already exists in the city for a multi-purpose system, which is the easier, simpler, cheaper system, which doesn't require any additional underground plumbing or additional meters or anything else.
Is the cost of that what you had put in your letter? There was a couple of costs. Puget Sound Builders had one cost.
Yeah.
Is it the $161 per square foot, do you think?
$161 per square foot is a number that was determined nationally, including by representatives of the building industry. That report is a number of years old. I would say probably 4 or 5 years old. I think the more accurate number that we can utilize in our community is probably $2 a foot.
Brad, I had a question. We had talked about property that's being built where there's limited fire access or one road, or and that is there a possibility of requiring mandating fire sprinklers in developments that don't have the right fire access, the right roads?
That's already required by the code.
Okay,
That was one of the two exceptions. One is that there's a future road stub or that they provide sprinkler
or that
systems.
We're mandating sprinklers development.
Yes, we've also already done that in several locations around town.
Okay.
Up 191st, there's some streets that don't have turnarounds or there are steeper driveways and things like that that have been required to install sprinkler systems.
Okay, so that was okay, that's all my questions right now.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I guess to Mr. Sachs's point, I talked to a couple of builders about this issue. And also got an email from the master builders who were against that. My concern is a couple things. One is if we did it in Monroe and people around us didn't do it, then it suddenly makes Monroe a more expensive place to build. And so when a builder's looking at their profit margin on a per house level, and if they can make $5,000 more by building a snow home, or building somewhere else that doesn't require it, they're going to go that route. I think that a lot of people assume that if you keep tacking stuff onto the builder, that they're just going to pay it, and magically that money just comes from somewhere. Usually it comes from the standpoint of cutting costs in other ways. So I don't know that you get a better quality house because they can't sell the house for more than what the market will bear for that house. I also was told that there's issues with things like you mentioned with the water. What if the city shuts off someone's water because they don't pay the bill? Did we just shut off their sprinklers and now we're liable for some issue like that? So it just seems like it's a big can of worms that I'm not interested in tackling. While I agree that it provides a level of insurance, there's lots of things that you could say, non-breakable glass, there's a million things that you could say is safer and it makes sense. But if people want it, they'll buy it. And I think us mandating that people have that does not make sense to me.
Councilmember Hammond.
I concur to exactly what you said, Councilmember.
Any other comments, questions, concerns?
administration a couple of times when they had the fire suppression or what, you know.
Right, side by side.
Yes,
right.
And it was amazing how quickly the sprinklers, and if you don't have sprinklers, what can happen in a home, which I find very compelling. I know it raises the cost of the building. I get that, and I understand we don't want to keep tacking on costs. I think looking at the other fees, the park mitigation and the other things, this to me rises to a a higher level because it's the safety of our community. So I'd be more apt to add this in and approve it. So I'm hoping that council will think about it over the next week and look at the video if you haven't had a chance to look at the video, and look at if we did put it in. It does raise the cost of the bill, which most likely the developer would pass it off to the homeowner. Looks like it'd be somewhere about $4,300 by my cost, you know, to $5,000 or $6,000 to add in the sprinkler system per house, which is a cost. It could lower the insurance for the resident coming in. I find Captain Fitzgerald's letter very compelling, and I just think, you know, this is an issue that keeps coming back around, and, you know, I'm going to spend the next week looking at it even more closely, but I would like us to consider this and not just look at the money and the cost passing on to developers, but kind of look at the bigger picture of what this could do. So, thank you.
You are correct. Just keep coming around. Is that the fourth time I've been involved in the discussion?
Yeah. May I?
Yes.
This is actually the first time that council has been asked to consider a requirement for residential fire sprinklers hasn't yet. So I appreciate that you're taking the opportunity to at least consider the issue. It really is the first time that you've taken the action to consider it, not by any fault of your own, but just many circumstances that has gotten us here and also prevented us from getting to this point in the past. So if I could just give you a take-home point, I would ask you to consider that when a developer comes in and builds a building, they're not building it unsafe. They're building it, the contractors builds very safe buildings. It's not the building that it's a problem. It's the people who inhabit the buildings that cause fires, most of the fires. Now, certainly we see electrical fires, but we don't see fires starting on their own because of the building being built. It's the people that reside within the building. And we like to protect those people the best we can. We think the best way to do that is with residential fire sprinklers. We do that. We mandate seat belts. We mandate helmets. We mandate many things that people would choose to do otherwise on their own. So we're asking that you consider mandating that builders invest in this community, invest in the safety of this community. Certainly it's life safety against cost, but just ask you to consider those points.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
So when I'm coming back, I'm very conflicted personally on this. I cut fire sprinkler drop when I went through college. I'm very aware of how the systems work and how they save lives. My dad's been a safety professional his entire career. I've had them installed in my home. There's a piece of me that looks at, and that's what I was the one that asked the question about, what are our current regulations in regards to single access? When I had them installed before, it was in Eastern Washington, and that was we were up on the plateau in East Wenatchee, and all the homes that are up on top of there because of the one access road. Venture Heights. Yes, 2249 Venture Heights Boulevard, that's where I resided. I am very aware. I'm also very aware of the cost, and to me, it does get into. I'd be more interested to see, that the incremental step of reviewing the current Brad, you mentioned that that we already have that in place, the single access road. Maybe looking at that, part of the code a little bit more on making sure that we're. Price to life, risk-taking. You look at 20 years, we've had two, the quote from your letter, you know, two deaths is too many. And, you know, we would all agree. I don't know what the specifics behind there. I mean, I understand that you're asserting that they have fire sprinkler systems, that those lives would have been saved, that nothing to say that that's not the, not the case in any way, shape, or form. I'm just wondering if what we already have in place and the requirements that we have in place in regards to where we install and require fire sprinkler systems to be is adequate for the city, you know, city limits. I understand the recommendations for everywhere, but I think there's a lot of data that also shows the, you know, the contrary, that the stuff that we have in place is sufficient. So that's a very long way of saying I too will take a look at it, you know, over the week. But I am more inclined to go on the side of taking a, you know, a look of what we're currently requiring, the requirement for having fire sprinkler systems. You know, what are those, and then what are areas that, within the city that may be outside the lines of those current, you know, enforcing what we already have in the code, you know, type of deal would be something that I would be more interested in looking at. I understand the seatbelt example. I knew you were going to use it, and the helmet example. And I understand that those are also state laws. We're also looking at the economic vitality of the area. We've got a county and other cities right next that we're all fighting for, you know, investment. Yes, we want to have the most. We want to be safe, but at the same time, if we're going to be pushing a mass investment outside the city limits to go to the county, I'd rather have the tax dollars. So that's kind of where I stand.
So Brad, with that though, if there's the specifics, I don't know if it's in the packet, and I just didn't read it in the 95 different pages that are in there, but the specifics around where we do require fire sprinkler systems, and then if there's any areas within the city that we currently don't even meet our own code. Thanks. Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to say that I appreciate Captain Fitzpatrick's position on this and his letter. It's informative and good information and all. And I understand where you're coming from, and I got to say that I would expect no less from you.
Good.
Absolutely. If you didn't have that perspective, then I might be a little worried. So I do appreciate that. But I also have to balance the cost with the value of it. And that's what I'm looking at right now. We're looking at new homes, only new homes, it seems to me. And I like the system. I think the system is very effective and very a very good system. But it seems to me to be more value if it was in older homes. And I don't see us being able to do that. The public would appreciate us coming out and saying you have to put a sprinkler system in your 20 to 15 year older year home. That wouldn't fly at all. So putting it in newer homes, we're adding that cost, and that's going to affect. I mean, we're starting to come out of this financial malaise, and builders are looking at building and everything else. And first thing they're looking at doing here is tacking a several $1,000 cost on them. So I'm not sure that this is the right time, even if it's the right thing to do for that purpose. So it's a balance, and I'm inclined to go with the fact that, as Councilmember Gamble had said, things are, the newer homes and all are very safe, and we don't seem to require that level of or that next step, and I don't see the cost as being as effective or appropriate. So I'm inclined to go with not having the sprinkler system.
Councilmember Gary.
Thank you. I agree with pretty much everything that's been said. There's been different points, and I think everyone's points have been very valid. I want to kick this around a little bit more. There is the balance, and I think everybody has talked about that, and I couldn't agree more. There's there's the balance of safety, and then there's the balance of continuing Monroe to be an attractive place to come build. We are in competition, and right now we have a leg up, and it'd be nice to keep that leg up, and yet not compromise on safety. So I appreciate all those comments. I do have one question. I was wondering if Commissioner Snyder was just not at the meeting, or if he just didn't sign. Or
I wondered that myself.
Yeah,
and I was not at that meeting. But
just curious on the blank. I would normally think maybe he just wasn't there, but just curious about it. So.
That's what I would hope.
Yeah, indeed, I would hope. Yeah, there you go. And I do appreciate all the information as well. Very good. So thank you.
Councilmember Williams.
Thank you. I want to add on what a couple of council members said that I thought were important comments. One, Mr. Davis, I agree. I would expect nothing less than the fire department for coming here. And so I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're pushing for your cause. To Councilmember Gamble's point, that the seatbelt analogy, that what makes that difference to me is that's a state law. Like you said, it levels the playing field. If we did something in Monroe that made Monroe more expensive, more restrictive from the standpoint of more permits, more inspections, and everything else, but our neighboring communities aren't doing that, we've just made Monroe more difficult for people to build in and for people to buy houses in. We had people here a month ago talking about having sewer run to their houses, and it was presented as you'd have this great city sewer and it would raise your property values, and we had every single homeowner but one come and say, I'm not going to pay for it. It's not worth it to me. And so, again, this is about giving people choice. You can't regulate everything out of what people are going to do. And if people are going to be foolish and do things, you know, making government tell them to put sprinklers in to save them from themselves, I don't agree with that. To your points.
Great point, Ray. Thank you.
Yeah. I believe more people are injured, at least in our community, every year. And even some maybe even killed from things like break-ins and that type of thing. But we don't regulate deadbolts on every door and iron doors and bulletproof glass. All things that I can see the police department come and say, that's one wonderful thing, we should do that, make our community safer, because people won't pay for it. I know I read every year of people dying in their garage from barbecuing, putting their barbecue in when the power goes out because of having no heat, but we don't mandate that houses are ventilated from propane. I mean, there's got to be an end to when we say that we're going to mandate safety and personal choice for every situation. We just can't, we'll never get ahead of that curve. So from that standpoint, and we already have laws, code enforcing that people that are outlying and that they don't have any way to get fire to them quickly or fire protection, they have sprinklers. Mandating this to the general population, I think, is the wrong thing to do, and I would not be in favor of bringing it forward. I don't need another week to decide. My opinion is I'm in favor of this without the Section S, but nothing against the fire department.
Certainly, we don't take it that way.
Yeah.
Again, as I said, this has been long discussed here. This is, I think, I'm going to say fourth time that I've heard, or maybe it's the third. As a consumer, if I had two homes side by side, one slightly more than the other because of the cost of fire sprinkler system, as a consumer, I might lean towards that. But that again would be a choice that I would hope I can make on my own, not something that was mandated. In the helmet scenario, it is state law. I think it's a dumb law. I would love to drive down the road with my motorcycle or on my motorcycle without my helmet. I think it should be my choice to say whether or not I am going to be stupid or not. Councilman Campbell pulls his helmet up on me. And so I appreciate your... That has been the arguments in the past, that we cannot regulate everyone's safety 100% of the time. All right, any other comments or questions, directions for Ms. Robert? All right, and we'll see this next week. It appears at that decision or motion whether to include Okay, thank you then. We will move on to council member reports. Councilmember Gearing.
Thank you. Well, I wasn't able to participate myself. The Relay for Life happened last week, and I was able to support some people financially in the game since I wasn't able to participate myself. I just really appreciate the way the community came together for that, and I think that's just a really awesome event. Along those same lines, over the Memorial Day weekend, I had a chance with my family to do a color vibe run. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that. It's raising money for a cancer event that was held in Seattle. It was actually held nationwide. It was an event in Seattle. It was an event at Bellevue Community College. I was thinking how cool that would be to do it. Essentially, it's a 5K run, but along the way, you get a white T-shirt and you run through stations where people douse you with different powdered colors, and it's a blast. And our kids, we just had a riot as a family doing it, and people were. It was just a crazy time. It was, you know, the age ranges from young kids to people well into retirement age, just having a blast. How cool would that be, you know, to do something like that here. So anyway, had a great time doing it for a great cause, and maybe something to consider in the future here, putting on the mineral and that way. So we had a great time.
Many of you might have seen in the paper over the weekend that a state trooper, Sean O'Donnell, was killed in the line of duty. He was a Y member here in our community. Great person, wonderful father. He'll be very missed, and I would appreciate, Mayor, with your permission, that we take a moment of silence and just remember him and his service. And as a Y team, we're to do something in his honor. He was very much into triathlons and helping others, and very fit person, and it was a big part of his life, and we want to do something as a community to remember him, but I would appreciate if we just took a moment of silence and thought about his family, and my thoughts and prayers go to his family. There is a service on Thursday that is open to the public. It's 1:00 at Comcast Arena. I will be there in attendance, and it's just another, you know, we swore in a police officer tonight, and I just value everything that they do for public safety, and, you know, as we've heard and said before, at any moment, anything could happen out there, and what the police and the troopers and all do to keep our community safe is so appreciative and so valuable, and we're just going to miss Sean O'Donnell, and he was 38 years old and had young kids, and it's a big loss. So, with your permission, we could have a moment of silence.
Thank you, Councilmember Kadebeck. Please lead us in that, if you would.
Somebody, especially this day, to survive that.
In a lighter note, I was fortunate to be able to participate in the Monroe Christian School Touch a Truck last weekend. I was even more fortunate to be able to be the babysitter for a donated NASCAR race car, and not only that, I got to be towed in it. The funny part was watching me climbing in and out of the window to sit in the car. They wanted to sell tickets, so I was designed for a very small, skinny guy.
Can you clarify that?
I was towed.
You didn't drive it. They just
I was steering the wheel, and they towed me into the truck. And that was exciting. I could picture
this as a problem.
180 miles an hour. Right in my head. So it was exciting. And they had 700 people participating. That's it.
I knew there were some other council members who made that. I was also in attendance. That was a good event.
Good time.
Councilmember Davis.
Well, Sunday I stopped by Lake Tahoe and witnessed the events there. They had a skiing competition and a wakeboard competition in the afternoon. And it looked like it was a great turnout. The folks that were running it were very pleased and happy with Monroe once again, with all the cooperation. And we gave them good weather, so they were having a good event. You're welcome. So it was a great event, and it looked like a good crowd, and a lot of families down there in this one. And as that was explained to me, it was a combination of water skiing with older, which older people seem to be involved in, and then the wakeboarding, which young people are more involved in. So you had both groups together. So a lot of families turned out. It looked like a fun event. Exciting stuff.
I missed the ski or the slalom, and that's the one thing that I wanted to see. And between different things going on Sunday morning, I wasn't able to get there in time. But it made me a little later. But I agreed, heard a lot of really positive feedback from both those in attendance watching, as well as the folks that put that on for the first time this year. And certainly a lot of kudos to staff, and Mike's not here, but I was going to bring that up as part of my report, so thank you for doing so. Glad you were able to make that. Councilmember Gamble.
So the end of the season is upon us. This is a very exciting time, a great showcase of our city parks, the baseball fields. End of the regular season, Saturday kicks off down at Sky River Park. The most importantly, the rookie ball tournament of champions that will commence this weekend. I highly recommend checking that out. It will go on through next week, along with the other divisions of our Sky Valley Little League. That we've been doing that. They also have tryouts for the All-Star teams. Just a lot of kids are getting out of school, and now they're moving into the next phase of the baseball season. And it's just really great to be out at the city of Monroe Parks and seeing them utilize this time of year. It's just, again, they do a fantastic job. And if you get a chance, get out there. All kinds of good food and good entertainment. So that's where I will be.
You hear that, Councilmember Lee? Baseball, good entertainment.
Baseball.
I'm going to the cross.
Baseball.
See, I didn't say it.
He said that. We should clarify that it's good entertainment. It is better than what's going on at Safeco right now. So. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, so I was able to participate in the Touch of Truck event and the Monroe Christian as well. And it was a wonderful time. And really, that whole day, I was running kids everywhere all day, and the city was just a buzz with different things going on, and car washes, and just, I came home just thinking, I'm so glad I live in this community. And someone posted pretty much exactly what I was thinking on Facebook about what a great place to live. And driving around the city, all these things going on. Just a satisfying feeling. That was a wonderful, wonderful the weekend. That's all I have to report, but I do have a motion to make. If I can do that now. I move to authorize the mayor to send a letter to Republic Services concerning the April 2013 missed collection event, proposing a settlement in the amount recommended in executive session, and putting the company on notice of the city's intent to impose full liquidated damages pursuant to the existing agreement in the event that Republic Services does not accept the proposed settlement.
Second.
Okay, motion has been read by Councilmember Hanford, made and seconded by Councilmember Gearing. Any other comments or questions? All right, with that said, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you very much. You may have a copy of your motion. We'll provide that to the meeting. Okay, moving on to staff reports. Mr. Sachs.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow along with the article in the Herald Business Journal, Tom Holden is the author of that real estate column every week. Today in the Herald Business section, I talked about Tom's business, Coast Equity Partners, and they closed on Morning Run, 222-unit housing or apartment complex here in town. He's paid $26.4 million for it. So not only is he talking about it from an opinion point of view, he's putting his money where his mouth is. And I can't reinforce enough how folks outside of Monroe are looking at our city. And they see it with potential. They see opportunity. And a lot of times, I think, inside the city of Monroe, the residents, a lot of times, don't see what the people from outside see. There's just a lot of energy around the business community right now, and the decisions that council has made over the last 3 years have been substantial and moving us in the correct direction. So, as I said, was quoted, it's great to work for a place that, you know, there's activity going on a daily basis, and it's a great team to work with.
Thank you. Diane?
Every year on September 1st, Allied Republic Services has the option to increase their rates or adjust their rates per different indices that are called out in the contract. And those figures are now in, and it will be approximately a 1.62% increase in what they are charging us. And that is a small enough amount that the city is able to absorb that increase without passing it on to the customers. So there will be no increase in solid waste rates for the next year for assessments.
Thank you. Chief?
Yes, I have three things. First of all, some of you may be aware of this, but we have three officers at the academy at this time. I'll be graduating later this early fall, I believe, hopefully anyhow. Second, the trooper who was killed worked both for myself and for Deputy Chief Gennard in the past. Monroe Police Department is very involved in planning the services for the trooper. And I believe it's 1:30, not 1 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday, if you plan on going, be prepared to get there early. There's supposed to be quite a large turnout. And lastly, again, most of you are aware that we had a homicide approximately a week ago last Friday. I chose to call in the Snohomish County multi-agency response team to investigate it. And the reason I did that is threefold. There were three agencies, or twofold. There were three agencies involved in using use of force. Ourselves, the Snohomish County Sheriff's Department, and the Washington State Patrol. And the last reason was the suspect that the use of force was used on at that time, I was told, was in pretty good condition. He has made a recovery, and he is currently housed in Snohomish County Jail and will be charged with, I've been told by the prosecutor, first-degree homicide.
Thank you, Chief. Brad?
Just one thing is there, Snohomish County Council is having a public hearing on the 12th, which is Wednesday, regarding the Snohomish County Buildable Lands Report. And they have three proposals before them, basically for 2,035 housing or employment, not employment, population. They have City of Monroe, UGA, receiving an additional 5,268 to 6,313 more people in the UGA by 2035. There are the differences in the thing. It's probably not critical that we go to that meeting to voice an opinion one way or the other, since it is so far in the future. And before that actually comes by, there will be four more updates. So this basically sets us up for having a good growth, you know, in the future, coming along with the plats that we have in, which will give us a good start for doing the 2015 comprehensive plan update. And then as that goes forward, we'll see how growth works out in like the next 5 years and be better positioned to lobby harder if we find that we need to have more growth or more room for more people in the UGA. So that's available for anybody who would like to attend. It's at 10:30 a.m. So,
City Administrator Brazel.
Thank you much, Mayor. The first thing, I just want to make council aware of that we conducted interviews for a permit tech position last week, and we made a final selection. This is an employee that I believe works for Island County, has been there for 6 years, and she has accepted the position. Her name is Jessica, and she will be starting on June 17th, and if council remembers, this is a backfill position from Jillian that will be retiring in June as well. Draft agenda for June 11th, 2013. Business and action items. We have the consent agenda for stormwater easement. Under new business, we have an ordinance adopting 2012 building codes and amendments. First reading. Number two, ordinance amending chapter 15.01, stormwater. First reading. And then we have number three is the landfill investigation update. Our consultant has finished the first steps of that project. We finalized the report with them today. It was a draft document. Brad and I went through that with them. So that will be for council's review. And that report will actually, it describes the next steps. If council agrees to move forward, that will be moved on to the Snohomish County Health Department. And they'll kind of give the okay to move into the next steps. Next steps would be borings and actual excavation of a few spots to find out what type of material is there. But anyway, that is next week. Exciting stuff. What they've done so far has been amazing. It's really pinpointed what we have there. More to come on that. Study session topics. We have discussed at Meadows speed bumps. That was the letter that was sent to Councilmember Camp. We've done some work in-house on that particular proposal. We have the department reports and the draft agenda for June 18th, 2013.
Councilor Lindsay.
Thank you, Gene. Gene, the discussion on the speed bumps, is that going to be focused primarily on that letter, or are we going to have information about city policy on speed bumps? Or are we looking at it more globally, or is it just focused on?
I think it'll be globally because it comes down to the MECCD, which is a traffic manual, essentially. So it'll be a bigger discussion.
Okay, if you would yield just for a second, I had asked that we have a broad discussion as well. It's listed as statement based on the letter.
Yeah.
Because
I've had a couple of people say exactly. They want them in their neighborhoods, too.
So yeah. Just lots of people would like to have them, so I thought it was worthy of the discussion. Sure, maybe.
And I just would like to give Brad and his team kudos. Recently we had some concern from the hospital in regards to a pedestrian crossing at the intersection there. And we responded, went out and looked at the situation, and we're putting a mid-block essentially crossing in there. Because there's a recovery center across the street now that wasn't there in the past, and there's a lot of pedestrian traffic heading back and forth daily. And so at any rate, kudos to Brad's team for getting out there and working with those particular people. And I think the result is going to be excellent.
Well, I concur with that, Brad. Appreciate what the team has done. When the doctors and I met a few weeks back and discussed that item, I assured them that the city would be responsive, and we certainly were, so thank you very much for that. Well, just a couple things, if I might report. One is that to restate, you know, one thing that has been mentioned, and that was the Relay for Life over the weekend. I've had several members, unfortunately, of my family, mainly women in my family, affected by cancer. Two of them lost their battle. My mom is now a five-year survivor, I believe 5 years, of a very aggressive form of cancer. And most recently, discovered that another member of my family has stage 4 ovarian cancer. And so this weekend for me was very, very touching and hit home. But what was very encouraging was seeing the number of survivors that were there, one of which is a staff member here at the City of Monroe. It really was a time of great hope, as well as challenge to be part of seeing you know, that a cure is found. And so I did put on my walking shoes. I walked up to the high school Saturday morning. I walked to the event at the Christian school from the high school. Then on Sunday, walked down to the park. And my knees are killing me today, but it was a great weekend for that. One other thing, on a personal note, I'm very sad to see the baseball season coming to a close. My son played for the high school this year. They did well, made it into the districts. And it was a great season, but I must admit I'm a little more happy because football has started. And the Monroe High School football team put together a 7-on-7 team and participated in a tournament this past week and won. And are now headed to a regional tournament to play against other winners of other regional competitions. This is sponsored by the National Guard. And the winner of this tournament will go to Ohio. Say that the 7-on-7 team scored, I believe it was 38, outscored their closest opponent by something like 16 touchdowns or something. 18 touchdowns in 2 games, no interceptions. They got a great squad. The receiver team is just awesome. So I know it's a little early, but come September, I'm going to invite you all out to Friday Night Lights. They're beginning. I think your son was at the camp this weekend. So a touching weekend, also the beginning of some excitement ahead. Great to be part of the community, I agree, and some very good things going on. So that's all that I have to report. Anything further this evening? If not, then I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All right, the motion has been made by